In the name of the Father and the Son, Holy Spirit, one God, Amen. I would like to welcome all of you for this second round of debate. We held the first one in March, I think, of this year, and it was about homosexuality. And this one will be about, does God exist? I know, and maybe in the mind of most of the people who are here, yes, God exists, and we don't have to debate this, but this is one of the most common questions outside. And we face this either with our friends, wherever we work, or at schools. And the world now is against the existence of God. And we can hear many people are telling us, this is a lie. God does not exist. And even if we have a firm belief that God exists, sometimes we have this kind of random thoughts that come and tell us, what if everything that we hear about is just a lie? Something that we heard it, we lived with it, without really being able to confirm that the God exists. So why we should believe? For the debate today will present the two sides of the argument. We understand and we know this very well. All the people on the stage, they still believe that God exists, but they are going to present both sides fairly. And then at the end, we will have a conclusion to hear, yani, how we should approach this subject and how we should think about it. I will leave it to Nader, the moderator of the debate, to let us know about what's going to happen step by step till the end of this session.
So thank you everybody for being here. The format of the debate is going to be similar to last time, where we're going to have five rounds. The first round, each team will have a representative who's going to give an opening statement. The one team arguing for the existence of God, and the other team arguing against the existence of God. So they'll have 10 minutes each in round one. Round two, they're going to cross-examine one another, so each team will ask a series of questions to the other team, giving the other team a chance to respond. And each team will have 5 minutes to ask questions. Round three will be a response. So anything that the teams want to bring up or mention related to points that the other team has already discussed, they can mention it in round three, 5 minutes per team. And then finally, the closing statements per team, 2 minutes each at the end. The very final round will be where I will ask the teams different questions based on things that I heard during the debate, or to clarify different things, or to further expand on different things. What we're going to do right now initially is we're going to do the voting, like Abuna said. And we will actually have these questions both now and at the end of the debate. So we can see how the opinions of the people changed as before and after the debate. So if everybody takes your remote, you can see there it has five buttons. It'll say A, B, C, D, and E. So each of these questions is going to have four possible answers. When I tell you to give the answer, you can just press the button and it'll record your answer. And you'll immediately see the results here on the slide. Okay, so the first question. Can God's existence be proven scientifically? A is definitely. B, not proven, but there is reasonable evidence. C, there's no evidence at all for God's existence to be proven scientifically. Or D, I don't know. If there's people that don't have remotes, there are some empty remotes here in the front. If you want to come in the front, there's remotes so you can vote. So everybody voted? We have 60 remotes, we only have 30 votes. If there's anybody that wants a remote, there's more remotes here. So 41% of the people say definitely God's existence can be proven scientifically, and then 36% say that there's reasonable evidence to show that God exists, and 13% say there's no evidence at all, and 10% say they don't know. Okay, number two. Can God's existence be disproven scientifically? The first question was speaking about whether we can affirm that God exists, we can prove that God exists. This question is asking the opposite. Can we prove that God does not exist scientifically? A, yes, atheists can demonstrate that God doesn't exist. B, no, there is reasonable evidence that God doesn't exist. Or C, there is no credible evidence against God. Or D, I don't know. So most of the people said no. That no, God's existence can't be disproven, but there is reasonable evidence that God does not exist. So that there is evidence showing that God doesn't exist, but there's not a proof. 21% people says that yes, that atheists are successfully able to demonstrate that God does not exist. And 21% don't know. Number three, How confident are you that God exists? A. No doubt in my mind. B. Almost sure. C. Doubtful. Or D. God does not exist. So 62% that they have no doubt at all that God exists. 29% almost sure. 7% are doubtful of the existence of God. And 2% believe that God does not exist. Number 4. Do you feel that atheists have good arguments against God's existence? A. Yes, we can't argue against them. B. Yes, but I think there are good responses. C. No, they don't make sense. Or D. I don't know. 7% say that the atheists have very good arguments and we don't know how to argue against them. B. 52% say they have good arguments but we can find good responses. 25% no, they don't make any sense. The atheistic arguments don't make sense. And 16% don't know. Number 5. Do you feel that we are equipped to respond to atheists? So as Christians, do we have the appropriate responses to respond to atheists when they question the existence of God? Do we have something to say? A. Yes, we can respond effectively to atheists. B. We understand our faith, but we don't know how to respond or explain why we have faith to others. C. We don't even understand our own faith to give any kind of response. Or D. They are right, meaning that God doesn't exist, but we can't admit it. We are unwilling to admit, but we believe that they are right. So 25% of the people believe that we can respond effectively, that we have the responses. But 64% believe that we understand what we believe, but we don't know how to respond. This is actually why we're having this debate, so that we can learn how to respond to the people that don't believe in God. 9% say that we don't understand our own faith enough to be able to describe it or explain it to anyone else. And 2% say that they are right, and we can't admit they are right, that God doesn't exist. Number 6. How often do you read and search for the existence of God? You yourself, how often do you go and actually try to make effort to discover if God exists or not? A. I'm actively searching. B. Casually searching. C. Barely searching. Or D. Not searching at all. So 51% say that they're not searching at all. 12% actively searching, 12% casually, and 26% barely. So the majority not searching to see if God exists. Number 7. Which of the following is the most reliable source of information on God? A. The church. B. The home. C. School. Or D. Friends. Where do we get the most reliable information about God? 95% say the church. 2% home, 2% school, and nobody learns anything about God from their friends. Okay, thank you. That's the survey we do at the beginning. We're going to ask the same questions again at the end. Now we're going to start the debate.
So our presenter that's supposed to do the opening case is kind of stuck in traffic. So you'll have to bear with me, I'm sorry. Good evening. How's everybody today? Good. Thank you for the response. I appreciate it. Now I'm here representing our fabulous young group, informally named the Coptic Atheists. Now we're arguing against the existence of God. We have one belief. Belief is God is a fabricated persona that man created in order to cohabitate with other humans, meaning God was man-made. God is a man-made concept. Okay? Now, we have 2 points under this. First, we're going to go over social evidence, and then we're going to go over concrete evidence. And I'll explain what those two mean. First of all, the social evidence. All right. Now, before religion, before prehistoric times, before anything, man concocted different ways to explain phenomenon. Things they couldn't explain, things they couldn't understand, how the sun shone light, what thunder was, lightning, all this stuff, they couldn't really explain. So what did they do? They put it under a god. Oh, this must be from some existential being that doesn't exist, that they just put a name on so that they could explain these things to the layman. So with these explanations came rituals. And with these rituals, religion began, only in large populations. If we notice in these times, large population areas were the ones that began to develop religions, organized religions that expanded into a formal organization, a formal religion. So, but if you look at all these religions, if you look at all these organizational ways, you see how God is something that they made up to conveniently fit their lifestyle. First, we start with our very own, the ancient Egyptians. All right. What did they do? What was the point? They were, the pharaohs were considered gods. All right. So why do we ever think about this? The pharaohs wanted to consider themselves gods so they can basically tell people what to do and they will just do it because they believe that they're God. The Hindus. Hindus are actually before the ancient Egyptians and they had a god for everything. All right. So anything on earth had its own god and people would follow whatever god they chose that fit their own thing. So somebody chose, they really like the sun or the mountains, so they believe in a god that's the god of the mountains because they live in the mountain, or the god of farming because they're farmers. So they conveniently believed in whatever god fit their lifestyle. Now, as well, ancient Egyptians also had, going back to them, they also had rituals that did ridiculous things like throw a virgin in the Nile so they'll have fertility. Now, how does this prove anything about the existence of God? Now we go to Judaism, all right, something close to home. Now, this group basically made up a god that would allow them to kill anyone that didn't follow their directions. If you kill, you get killed. If you commit adultery, you get killed. If you complain, you get killed. Now, again, and keeping going with the same god, supposedly the same god of Judaism, the god of Islam, right? Supposedly the same, but he gives this group of people an excuse to use force to make people follow directions as well. And to kill anybody. Now, this time, they were supposed to kill anybody that didn't believe in Islam. Now, the God of the Christians. The God of the Christians came and tried to smooth things over conveniently because now the times were changing. So this Christ who believed to be the Son of God came and changed and made all of these really strict rules kind of mellow out. So, oh, you're supposed to love and do all this stuff. Why? Because people were looking bad on the Jews at this point. Now we go on to the concrete evidence. Now, this is the physical evidence that proves that God does not exist. So, of course, we're going to start out with evolution. I mean, this is the main topic. I'm not going to go completely into it because it's just the most plain, the most obvious things that happen. And every day there are new species discovered. So does that mean does God keep creating all these new species? And assuming that God did create humans, why do some humans have genetic disorders and that are manifest at birth? And why do children look like their parents? If God created the individuals, if God created each individual in their own way, why do we look like the people that we descend from? And why do we have similarities to the animals that we descend from? The other thing is fossil dating. If we most gods are dated back about 5,000 to between 5,000 and 7,000 years ago. If we look at any fossil dating, most fossil dating in Brigham University just came out with a new discovery that dated fossils back 500,000 years. The full skeleton was just discovered that was dated 100,000 years ago. Now this also supports evidence of entire communities and civilizations in Middle Africa that were discovered 8,000 BCE. This is not the only point in the major flaw of the Judeo-Christian God. But this proves the biblical timeline as well. So, in conclusion, the manifestation of man, that is the concept of God, is flawed and changes according to the time, location, and the culture. This is not only supported by social evidence, as in the evidence of the multiple religions and the multiple manifestations of God, but also by the concrete evidence in evolution, animal species diversity, and fossil dating. Thank you very much.
Clarify. So We have three observations before we start talking about evidence. Observation one, we just want to clarify that God cannot be revealed through rationality alone. The following arguments are not going to reveal God to you. By the end of this debate, we hope to give you reason to go and search for Him yourself. Observation two, when we refer to God, we mean the ultimate first cause of all things, who cannot be subject to any other cause. Nothing existed before God to cause Him to be. And observation three, proving God can be very subjective. When people ask to prove God's existence, they beg the question, well, what proof do you need? When you are asked to prove something, what you need to do is only provide enough evidence to convince someone that a certain claim is true. For example, I cannot prove to you that my parents love me, but I can give you like evidence of 17 years of all of the things they've done and all the things that they've said to me. And based on the proof that I give you, you make a choice on your own. So number one, science reveals the existence of God. The design of the universe demands the existence of a designer. St. Augustine says some people read books in order to find God. Yet there is a great book, the very existence of created things. Look above you, look below you. God, whom you wish to find, never wrote that book with ink. Instead, He set before our eyes the things that He made. Can you ask for a louder voice than that? Why, even heaven and earth cry out to you, God made me. So the mere existence of the creation proves and even praises the existence of the Creator. Many discoveries show that the universe has a beginning, and this implies that it has a cause, based on one of the most fundamental concepts of science and logic. Consider the following. Energy and matter can neither be created nor destroyed, right? This is like the basic thing we all learn in science. The universe, which has innumerable amounts of energy and matter, began to exist. Therefore, the energy and matter in the universe were created. So breaking science laws would be miraculous and requires divine intervention. Therefore, the beginning of the universe shows divine intervention, which proves the existence of God. So there has to be something beyond the universe, like beyond time, to cause it to exist, which created the universe out of nothing and brought it into being. The dictionary did not come about because of some explosion in a printing press. It had to be carefully and thoroughly assembled. Similarly, the universe, this intricate design of the universe, did not come about just from matter plus energy plus chance. It came about from a designer. Consider the unimaginable accuracy of the Earth. One, its perfect size allows its gravity to hold an atmosphere. Two, this atmosphere has all the gases needed and the right amount of them to sustain human life and animals and plants. Number three, its large continental land masses support human life. Four, its water is colorless and odorless and tasteless. Yet it's all living creatures are, like their survival of all living creatures depend on it. Five, its orbital path is the right distance from the sun. Six, its magnetic field has the right strength to deflect the radiation of the sun. Its perfect distance from the sun gives us sustainable amount of heat and light needed for survival. Our home star, the sun, has the right temperature, the right mass, the right distance from us. And the moon stabilizes the Earth's axis and its environment. Even though there are countless planets out there, it is very unlikely to have one habitable planet. The odds to have all of these factors appearing all at the same time in one single planet is less than 1 to 1,000 trillion chances. The fine-tuning of the Earth to accommodate our existence proves the existence of a God who treasures the human life and gave us such wonders to contemplate His beauty rather than doubt His existence. Dr. Francis Collins was an atheist physician geneticist. After leading the famous Human Genome Project, he became Christian, and he made one of his most recent books is The Language of God, A Scientist Presents Evidence for Belief. So he explains his belief in both science and religion, saying, I have found there is a wonderful harmony in the complementary truths of science and faith. The God of the Bible is also the God of the genome. God can be found in the cathedral or in the laboratory. By investigating God's majestic and awesome creation, science can actually be a means of worship. Francis Bacon says, a little bit of science leads you to atheism, but real science leads you to God. Subpoint B, humans cannot be the outcome of natural selection. The human enzyme, for example, creates the gene that creates the cell. According to research from Cardiff University in Wales, the possibility of human enzyme coming together by chance, just by random, is 10 to the 40,000. That is 40,000 zeros after a one. That's more than the numbers of all the atoms in the universe. Consider the human cell. In each cell, there is about 3 billion units of DNA making up the chromosomes. And these DNA units make up the molecular machines of the cell. The only reasonable conclusion about the origin of the cell is that it's a design. Where did the information come from? Information requires to be written. In the case of DNA, written by a genius beyond genius. The smartest software programmers can't even come close to writing any program that comes anywhere near the complexity of the DNA. There is only one cause for the origin of information, and that is intelligence. Intelligibility of any design directs us to the intelligence that caused it, not randomness generated by inorganic materialistic things. Randomness cannot generate information, no matter how much time you give it. The information we find in every cell, in every living creature, is the signature of a creator. Number two, the existence of God affects our daily lives. Without the existence of God, the only incentive for a human to be moral is just because there are other people watching you. So you need to be moral because there are other people watching and judging. The money bill, for example, in your wallet right now has no value in and of itself. Money receives its value from speculation. In order for it to be universally recognized and functioning and efficient, it needs a standard or point of reference to measure it by. So without a basis to measure morality, it has no value. If there is a moral law, then there has to be a moral lawgiver. There has to be something of infinite worth that gives morality, humans, and other things their worth. An atheist may choose to become moral, that's okay, but without the existence of God, there is no rational basis to uphold morality. There's no rational basis for them to be moral. No motivation, no meaning, no standard. Morality becomes purely subjective, driven by society's judgments and reactions to one's behavior. Those who believe in God, however, are intrinsically motivated to uphold a moral law regardless of the presence of people around you. Subpoint B, without the existence of God, human life loses value. Your life becomes no different than that of a fruit fly. Thus, the sufferings of humans would not even be questioned unless human life is assumed to have value. The only way that humans can have value is that if there is a being of intrinsic value creating them in his image, justice, intellect, and morality. Atheists, on the other hand, can neither explain the purpose nor the importance of the human life. It is to no surprise that the World Health Organization reports that suicide rates are the highest among the strongly irreligious nations with the high levels of atheism. At the end of the day, even if we suppose that God's existence is a 50-50 chance, the toss of a coin determines whether God exists after death or not, a believer loses little to nothing if he finds that there is no God after death. But if God does exist, an atheist loses eternal life. It's not worth the chance. There are four essential questions that everybody is accountable to answer and everybody has wondered about at some point in their life. Origin, meaning, morality, and destiny. Origin, where did I come from? How did I come about? Meaning, the purpose of life, why am I here? What is all of the little things that I'm doing? What do they lead me to? And morality, what defines the moral law? How do I know the difference between good and bad? And destiny, what happens to me after I die? Atheism is incapable of providing an answer to any of these. Only the existence of God can give you an answer to all of these. So through the existence of God, we can explain the cause of our own existence. We have a purpose and meaning to life. We have a moral law that is objective and not subjective. And we have hope in living eternally.
Okay, so now we're going to have the second round, which is the cross-examination round. So, Mina?
Okay, so, first question. Oops, sorry. Here we go. One key. Oh, there it is. All right, first question. So your culture argues that the presence of morality signifies the existence of God. Now, yet you express your distaste at the moral relativism and the moral decay of today. Since morals are decaying, does that mean God is ceasing to exist? In all essence, if God exists, why is Miley Cyrus on TV?
Because God gave free will to every human. So if God didn't give free will, like, we would be robots. Like, he doesn't, like, force us to love him or obey him. It has to be by our own choice. So if it's Miley Cyrus' choice to be on TV, that's her choice, not God's.
Okay, what about the first half of the question? Your answer, it's not mine. It's your question. If you can't understand my question. Okay, moral decay is meaning people are losing their morals. Okay? And you say this about the culture now, right? But you just argued, right, that morality proves the existence of God. So if morals are decaying, so God is ceasing to exist in what you're saying.
I repeat what I said. So everyone has a free will. Now, the morals that's decaying right now, it's not because God does not exist or ceasing to exist. It's because we're starting to disbelieve God. It's atheism that's being increased. That's when the result the moral that the morals are decaying. Not that God, the atheism is decreasing.
So God is leaving us.
He's removing his protection from us.
Okay. I'll go to my next question. Okay, you have to follow me on this one. All right. So, Christians believe that God created Adam and Eve in His image and His likeness, which, to what everybody believes, is perfect. So therefore, He created them perfectly. If they were created perfectly, how could they defile their own perfection? If God was perfect and He was God, then He couldn't create something that was not perfect. Therefore, we are not created by God. Thus, since we exist, God does not exist.
You forgot the third part, is the devil. This you're bringing is a story, the Genesis story from chapter 3. If you forget to mention the serpent. The serpent is that's interfered. And
I don't believe in God, so I don't believe in the Bible. So what you're saying.
If you're not believing in the Bible, why are you using the Bible as a question?
You believe in the Bible, so I'm using your own questions to disprove what you're saying.
Evil that has to coexist to contradict God's goodness.
Okay, so you mean God couldn't create something that was impervious to evil? That can't defend evil.
If he did, so still free will will be like unused.
So what? Okay, I'll just go on. How are we on time? Okay, last question. So if God is incomprehensible and beyond the scope of human comprehension, right, because you stated in your case that he is the creator of all things and before the cause of everything, right? So how can humans discover the essence and the being whose power they can't even comprehend? How do we know his presence?
How can humans discover the essence of being whose power? That's the beginning of the question. God was not discovered. God revealed himself from the very beginning. He was known.
How?
If we're going to take the Christian, like the free Abrahamic religion, from Adam and Eve, and they said...
Okay, again, you're going into a story I don't believe in.
I don't believe your atheism either.
So... What I'm saying, like, how do we comprehend the actual essence that is God? God is beyond comprehension. God is the cause of everything. How is it that humans, simple humans, ancient, you know, civilizations, that their brain power could barely comprehend the concept of fire, how can they comprehend the concept of a God, of an existential being that was beyond their scope of mind?
First question, what gives human life its value?
What value?
So you mean it like we're no different from a fruit fly?
I don't think we are. Our existence on the planet is merely because of the way that life is, and the way that humans have evolved, and we've evolved to be on top of every other species in the world. All right, and that is our value.
So in the Holocaust, the Jews has no value either.
I mean, in the existence of mankind, there were a lot more people killed than just the Jews during the Holocaust time.
What is the meaning and purpose of life for an atheist?
Just to live. YOLO, right? That's the theme. The meaning and the purpose of life is to enjoy life, take life as it is. Why not?
What makes us more or less capable of pursuing the well-being of society?
Oh, that's a great question, actually. That goes back onto your morality issue. The fact that there is morality is only because humans wanted to cohabitate with each other. Okay? If you notice, large civilizations from the beginning of time, the ones that developed religion, all right, are the ones that developed morality so they could coexist. While the smaller population, like you see in Africa and the jungle and all this stuff, those are the people that we qualify as immoral. Why? Because they really didn't have to coexist with that many other people. A lot of their lives were dependent, independent lives. Now, while the people that had dependent lives in larger populations, they developed morality so that people wouldn't go around just killing each other and destroying civilization. That's why we are more or less capable of pursuing the well-being of society, so that society can thrive through the moralities that we've created since the beginning of time.
So the question is asking you, what makes people more selfish or less selfish? So one person may be more philanthropic than another. Like, morality to you is very subjective. You decide what is good, what is evil. You decide whether the human being kicked on the road is suffering or not. So what makes humans so subjective? Or what makes...
Yeah, that's my perception of the well-being of society, not anybody else's. If you're really saying that morality proves that God exists, there wouldn't be relative moralism or whatever.
So then where do you get your moral law from?
From my perception of the well-being of society. I believe that the society is going to go well.
So how can society...
Let me finish my answer. You asked the question. So society says that... my perception is that society will thrive if I'm a philanthropist. So I give the money so that society will thrive. But capitalism, all right, so somebody that's a capitalist-minded,
okay,
says society will thrive if I take all the money, if I earn all the money and spend it, then other people will thrive.
Your answer is on an individual basis, right? So how can you take these ideas, these personal ideas, I define morality this way, how can you take this and expand it to an entire nation? How can an entire nation uphold morality through the way that you're talking?
Right, You're taking morality on a large scale. Now, whenever you said that God instills morality in each individual, all right?
Right.
Right. So why are we taking on? I just answered it based on each individual.
Hold on. Do you believe in suffering?
Well, I mean, yes. I hurt my knee the other day. I definitely believe in suffering.
Okay. Do you believe in the suffering of other humans? That there is suffering that
they
happens
do.
To other humans. Okay. So then why is that, for some reason, more significant to you than the stepping on a cockroach?
When did I say that it is? Like we discussed earlier, the value of human life is just that it is. The reason that we value each other's suffering is because we coexist, we cohabitate. The reason that we don't, people are very sad when a dog dies. Why? Because they have a relationship with that dog. They coexist with that dog. They own and domesticated that dog. Now,
you don't have a relationship with the people in Africa for you to realize that there is suffering. If you realize that there is suffering, then you have to realize that there is goodness.
I realize that people step on flies. I don't feel.
Why
that
is that not a big deal to you? But the human that is dying is
because they're
more
of my
important.
Own species. They're of my own species. I care about the well-being and the development of society.
Why is your species more superior than others?
Because that's how evolution has made us. We have developed into the top of the food chain. And that's why we are more valuable.
We're going to discuss evolution in topic C, so I'll leave that.
Okay, the next round is the response. Samina, your team first. We have 5 minutes for response.
Hello. So one of the things that I would want to mention is the other team could not actually really answer any of our questions, which makes my response shorter. So God is not the designer of the universe. Why? Well, for so many reasons. They mentioned that we have the water, our distance from the sun, and so on. So many reasons that the earth is so perfect for us to live at, to live on. So these are actually reasons for life to start on earth, not somewhere else. And actually, life could exist somewhere else. We have no clue if it does or not. Science has not yet proven that, because the universe is so huge that we can't even, our mind cannot even imagine how huge the universe is, and really we can't discover this right now. And they mentioned something about God revealing himself to us. Well, if God is doing that, I mean, he's not doing a very good job at it. Honestly, I have a list in front of me that says out of the descendants of Abraham came 12 different religions. Well, I guess if God is revealing to himself to us, it's not working very well. And about morality is the way for a man to cohabitate together in large populations. This is the morals we develop, morals in order for us to live together. And if we're talking about the smaller the population is, it's the less moral and the uncivilized ones we consider them to be. That's because they didn't need morals. Some actually, up to this point, still some people live without morals in very small populations in Africa. And going back to the larger populations, and the higher their moral code, and that's because they needed to develop in order for their population to cohabitate with the environment around them. And I would like to touch on how our universe came to be about. This is absolutely not up to God, and this is not up to us. I mean, if God only made us humans and put us on Earth, well, does that mean that if aliens do exist, would God not? I'll leave this question to you all to answer. Thank you.
So I would like to mention one of the things that was mentioned in the questions. He kept asking, why can't we comprehend God? Why are we, if we are meant to comprehend God, and why can't we comprehend him if he is incomprehensible? But what is missing here is we are not meant to comprehend God. We are meant to believe in him. We are meant to come closer to him. We are meant to get a relationship with God, but we are never meant to understand the infinite. And in the case, he said, that people couldn't explain science, so they made things up. Then they came to the idea of God. But then, if they made up God, like, why didn't they come up with naturalistic explanations instead? Why did they have to come up with God? If they have to make up with God, then there's a lot of implications that come with that. This means we have to be accountable for him. This would have to mean that we have to uphold his moral laws, which are very tough moral laws. We have to uphold this. So why would they come up with all of these responsibilities? Then, but there's a clear distinction between false religions and the true religion. The false religions came up with wrong explanations, with wrong science. But the Bible has a lot of scientific facts that were mentioned before they were discovered. For example, 4,000 years ago, in the book of Job, in chapter 26 and verse 7 says that the earth hangs upon nothing. How could Job figure this out? How could they figure this out 4,000 years ago, that the earth hangs upon nothing and it hangs in space? They couldn't. They didn't have telescopes. This can only be revealed through God. This could only be revealed through divine inspiration. The Bible also said that the air has weight, and the Bible mentioned this fact about 4,000 years ago in the book of Job, in chapter 28, verse 25. So how could they figure this out? How could they figure that the air has weight? They couldn't. There's no way. They just figured it out about 100 years or 150 years ago. And some religions were made up to control people. That's what he said. But that's not the case for the true religion. Some religions were made to be this way, but that's not the case for Judaism. It's not the case for Christianity. In fact, God didn't want us to have kings. God was very upset when the people of Israel were asking for a king. Then Samuel told God that they're asking for a king and they want to abandon you. But God didn't give authority to men. He didn't give authority to kings. So this completely contradicts with his argument. Then in Christianity, God did not try to smooth things out. But through the sacrifice of Jesus Christ, our relationship with God changed. And the other contradictions like he made is Christianity is supposed to be one of those religions that created God to fit our lifestyles. But the Christian God enables us to change. So the change was from us, not really from God. And through the sacrifice of Jesus, our relationship with God changed. Then, you said that the Jews looked bad. Look bad? Look bad in front of whom? In front of the Roman Empire? The Roman Empire was one of the most vicious cultures in the whole history. So how do you expect them to look bad in front of the Roman culture? Then you talked about evolution. So for evolution, it says that the branching Darwin's now scientists discovered that the cells have very complex machines. Every machine has many complex parts, and they have to be present simultaneously. It can't be made in steps. All these parts need to be there in the same time, in the same order, to have functional systems. Another irrefutable argument against evolution is, if we don't have transitional fossils, if evolution was true, then we should have millions of transitional fossils. But we don't find this. If evolution was true, then why can't we see all of these transitional fossils? Even Darwin said, the number of intermediate varieties which have formerly existed on Earth must be truly enormous. Why then is not every geological formation and every stratum full of such intermediate links? Geology assuredly does not reveal any such finally gradually organic chains. And this perhaps is the most obvious and grievous objection which can be urged against my theory. So even Darwin himself doubted his own theory or his own idea of evolution because he can't find all these transition fossils. Is it time? Right, yeah. So luckily for evolution, I ran out of time because I would like to mention a lot of things about evolution.
Thank you. Now we'll have the closing arguments.
So why would God create us if we can't prehend him? Why? He created us to a purpose, and we can't prehend him, right? And people came up with the idea of God first because they couldn't come up with a reasonable answer. They didn't have the flexibility and the tools to come up with a real answer for thunder and all the other natural disasters or other stuff like that. And you keep on using the Bible. We don't believe in the Bible. Why do you keep reciting the Bible, something that we believe that is made up by man, just like God? And in conclusion, basically the manifestation of man, that is the concept of God, is flawed and changed according to time, location, and culture. This is not only supported by social evidence, as in evidence of multiple religions, but also concrete evidence in evolution, new animal species, diversity, and fossil datings. Thank you.
They tried to define God through the elements that he created, like creature, time, and other things. The problem is we can never completely understand God's design because we are subject to this design. They claim that morality is a cause of their own rational time, but they never even explain where does this rationality come from? Morality cannot be the outcome of evolution. St. Paul warns us, saying, "Beware lest anyone cheat you through philosophy and empty deceit, according to the tradition of men, according to the basic principles of the world, and not according to Christ." These words remind us of the importance of addressing this doubt in God, which has been crawling and growing into this generation, which most people face on a daily basis. Today we have proven the existence of God by the following points. First of all, there must be a creator and designer. This is clear by the fact that the universe we live in is so fine-tuned that if one of the variables in the universe were changed, then the universe would have not been able to exist. For example, calculations by Brand and Carter show that if gravity had been stronger or weaker by one part in 10 to the 40th power, then life-sustaining stars like the sun could not exist. This would most likely make life impossible. Secondly, it is impossible that one of the most basic structures of life was random, notably the enzyme. As we have stated earlier, human enzymes created the gene which created the cell. According to research from Cardiff University in Wales, the possibility of the human enzyme coming together by chance is 10 to the 40,000 power. That is 40,000 zeros after a one. That's more than the number of atoms in the universe. Thirdly, without the existence of God, the only incentive for a human to be moral is the presence of other people watching. Lastly, without the existence of God, human life loses value. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to now ask a few questions to both teams, trying to clarify some of the things that you said and maybe expand on them a little bit. For Mina's team, there's a man by the name of Stanley Fish, and he said, "A God whose existence could be demonstrated wouldn't be a God. He would just be another object in the field of human vision." So how can you claim to know for sure that God does not exist? And why wouldn't you at least just say that you have doubts about the existence of God? How can you positively say without a doubt that God does not exist? If the God we're talking about is a God that transcends humanity, someone who cannot be measured by our senses, how can you prove that he doesn't exist?
Okay, so to basically restart, the basis of the universe is output equals input, and then from there you just have energy, because like the universe just started off with just two particles, and then you put input and output. It's like multiplication. It's more just addition, and then you have the variety of the variables that create multiplication and all this. So no, it just came from one base unit, and then like over time, like when you had like the sun that developed, it produced like the hydrogen, helium, fission, which informed the sun, which is light, which we are apparently under the roofs of light. And then from there, like, because over time you get more particles and particles that are produced by the hydrogen.
Okay, you're talking about the origins of the universe. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about what makes you believe that you can prove or disprove the existence of a God that is greater than you are.
I was using scientific.
We simply, basically, have no physical proof of God existing in the universe. Therefore, he just doesn't exist.
Okay, so let me give you this example. Let's say somebody brought you a box that was closed, and they told you that you're not allowed to perform any experiments on this box. You're not allowed to measure anything about the box. You're not allowed to open the box. You're not allowed to do anything. And I came and asked you what's inside the box. What would your answer be?
I wouldn't know.
So why do you think you know that God does not exist?
Isn't that the same way that Christianity makes God? So Christianity and the people that say that God exists say he's this incomprehensible being. Even if you tried to understand him, you couldn't understand him, so don't try to understand him. So isn't that just like giving us a box and saying, hey, there's a box, don't question it, don't do whatever? Isn't that exactly what religion and Christianity say? Well, they're giving us an empty box.
Well, Christianity is saying that the means by which we detect the presence of God has nothing to do with our physical senses. But if science is limiting what we can prove or disprove based on what we can see, what we can hear, what we can measure, then science doesn't have the tools to determine if God exists or not. In the Christian sense, we're saying that there is such a thing as spirituality, which science denies, which is a sixth sense to detect that God exists, that can communicate with God in a different way.
Right. Science wasn't capable of disproving God. That's why God was created. Now that that science has expanded and continues to expand, we will begin to see more and more disproof of the existence of God.
Okay, thank you. For Sherry's team, when something good happens, you say that God is good and give Him credit for it. But when something bad happens, you say that God is mysterious and we don't understand how He works. Don't you feel this is a biased approach? And how do you expect a rational person to accept this?
So God is the source of good. So when anything good happens, this is from God. But evil could only be from the devil. Evil is like the absence of God. When something bad happens, then God is not involved in it.
So, but if God is as strong as you say, wouldn't He be able to stop everything that the devil does?
The problem is, if you have all goodness in the world, then you wouldn't recognize what goodness is. Evil has to exist in order for God's contradicting goodness to be revealed, to be appreciated, and to be seen.
Okay, thank you.
I have one more point. So, even evil has like a good outcome out of it. Like, and a good analogy is like a surgery. How can a surgeon do it without inflicting some pain, like opening up the patient's guts? So that's what there's some evils like that we receive some benefits from them. Just like Job, God allowed the evil to like inflict him for a while, but at the end he came out like with double what he had from the beginning. So evil can also be beneficial if it's from God.
Okay, thank you. Mina, for your team, do you believe in, I guess representing atheists, do you believe that sex outside of marriage is immoral?
Well, I believe it depends where you live. I mean, if you're in Egypt, no. In here, could be. Immoral?
Immoral. Do you believe that sex outside of marriage is immoral?
Yes, in Egypt, yes. It is immoral.
Here it's not?
Yeah.
Okay. You stated that the atheistic point of view of morality is that morality is based on the well-being of society. So if that's the case, then even science has proven that sex outside of marriage is one of the primary causes of sexually transmitted diseases, and so is homosexuality. And yet those two things are not considered immoral by the United States, like you mentioned. But if it's all based on the well-being of society, and we know that these things cause these diseases, then why wouldn't it be considered immoral by any society?
It's not that... So what is marriage, first of all? Marriage is a God or society created things to benefit people to live better in society. So the reason, it's not that it's immoral, it's that it's in people's perception, in their perception of morality, it doesn't affect society. Now, science has proven that it does affect society, because marriage, this concept created, to better society, exists, all right? And that's proven, so sex outside of that, whether it affects or doesn't affect society, doesn't prove anything about God.
I'm not talking about God now. I'm talking about the atheistic understanding of why morality exists. I think most people will agree that there is such a thing as right and wrong. We couldn't be able to function at all if there wasn't such a thing as right and wrong. Otherwise, why would we even punish criminals? But what I'm asking for is, if you believe that morality is based on what is for the well-being of society, then why wouldn't anything that has been shown to be against the well-being of society be immoral?
In people's perception, if somebody has a perception of morality that sex outside of marriage doesn't benefit society, then they believe it's immoral. If they are neutral or they don't believe it has anything to do with the well-being of society, then they don't believe it's immoral. That simple.
So you don't believe in any kind of an absolute morality. It's all relative to what the people believe.
It's not just relative to what the people believe, it's relative to the society, to the population, of whether, of how well-being it is. Is it wrong or right to go and go to the bathroom outside in the parking lot? Well, most people would say that it's wrong. Somewhere where in an uncivilized area where it fits their culture, that going to the bathroom outside in public works, then so be it. Sometimes it's actually encouraged to fertilize the land.
Thank you. about the morality of God for Sherry's team. If God is good and the source of morality, why did he order the death of many in the Old Testament, even innocent children, just because of the actions of their parents? Why does he command us not to kill, but take the liberty to kill on his own?
First of all, God did not kill those people. Second of all, it wasn't God's intention for all of this killing and all of these violence to be brought into the world. And third of all, the death and the killing is only a natural consequence of the evil that humans introduced to the world. And again, it got introduced because of free will, and if there wasn't free will, then God would be a controlling and...
But didn't God actually command the Israelites to kill the people in the land of Canaan when they came into the land in the Old Testament?
But the Bible didn't say what the Canaanites like offense, but they must have an offense because the consequence of like the wager of sin is death. The Canaanites could have like were a sinful city that we don't know what their sin was, but God like allowed the Israelites to overcome them.
Okay, thank you. For the other team. Do you want Christianity to be true?
What's the reason for the
question? I'm asking a question. Do you want it to be true? Or do you prefer that it were not true?
Okay, so basically in order to like just prove that religion exists, you got to get outside of the human view. Is this more... You gotta get it outside. You gotta look at the universe. You gotta look how other stimuli respond.
Well, let me stop you right there. The question is, do you personally, as an atheist, as someone who doesn't believe in God, do you wish that you were wrong? Or do you wish that the reality is what you believe it is?
Well, like, it's not, like, our place in the universe is not exactly just in the perfect view. It's gotta be more like just basically like, it's expanded out because, like, we're just of coincidence. The particles just happen to happen. There's more life out there that is more advanced to us. So no, that doesn't negate to us. Like on our point, we're just only focusing it on our own point.
And we're going to expand on that answer.
Okay. Okay. You see, I do wish that Christianity doesn't exist.
No, I'm asking, do you wish Christianity were true? I know you believe as atheists that it's not true.
Yes, it's not true.
Do you wish it were true?
No.
Why?
Because it limits me.
It limits you? Christianity is allowing... So the people who believe in Christianity believe that you live for eternity in joy and peace and bliss with God forever. So you're saying that you would prefer the reality to be that when you die, you cease to exist, rather than have that as be your destiny?
And the reason we don't wish Christianity to exist is because we can prove by Pascal's wager, Sherry actually brought it up. She said that the existence of God can be attributed to like a flipped coin. So in Pascal's wager, the same guy who created Pascal's triangle, he said that the majority of Christians simply choose Christianity because if they are right, then they go to heaven and they gain eternal life. But in the case that they are wrong, they don't lose anything.
I understand that you believe that the reasons that Christians believe in God are wrong, either because of controlling people or because they're delusional or because they feel like they need to have something to give them comfort. But what I'm asking is, do you wish that that were the reality? Actually, let me tell you why I'm asking this question. Okay? Okay. There are some atheists that are very sincere and honest, and they believe that there is no evidence for the existence of God, but they acknowledge that if God did exist, it would be a far much better reality than if he didn't. I actually had a friend who was an atheist who believed that God didn't exist because there was no evidence that he could see that he existed, but he said, I wish that there was a God. Because the reality of Christianity is far kinder and far better than the reality of atheism. So there are atheists that are convinced of atheism and actually want atheism.
Whereas those atheists that are maybe more seeking for the real truth are willing to accommodate other options. Not because they're irrational. They want to find it rationally, but they wish that there was something better.
I mean, I absolutely agree with you. Who wouldn't want an ultimate utopia of no suffering, no sadness? Right? But we kind of wish, I'm not going to speak just on my own behalf, but on a lot of atheists, is that some of them wish it wasn't true because obviously if it was true, right, they wouldn't be going to the right place. And we all hope for a utopian society. In fact, that's what we try to achieve on Earth. But it's clearly impossible.
Okay, thank you. Sherry, for your team. Christians agree that the story of Jonah remaining alive for 3 days in the belly of a large fish is true and actually happened. This is despite of the fact that, one, there is no evidence outside the Bible that it ever happened. Two, if a man was swallowed by a whale today, he would die. Three, if someone told you they spent the last 3 days in a whale, you would never believe them. Yet while Christians believe outrageous stories like this, they continue to reject a theory of evolution which at least has some evidence. Even if you can't say it's been proven, even if you say there's holes in it, there's at least some evidence to back it up. How can you reject a theory based on rational evidence while accepting a wild, one-of-a-kind claim like the story of Jonah with no evidence at all?
Just using this story of Jonah, I'm going to quote, God prepared a fish. Okay? God is the one who made this world. He can play with the rules he made as much as he likes. So if he can make a fish that can accommodate Jonah, can accommodate inside it for 3 days. It's very possible.
So with that understanding then, do you feel that it's not possible to ever explain Christianity in rational terms? If every time something that's like that happens, we say, well, God can do anything he wants because he's God. Well, then how do we even think about this God in any rational way? How do we say that we can logically think about God, a God who can do things far beyond what we're capable of understanding?
But God similarly allowed for natural consequences. And for every action, there is reaction. God left that up to us. And so we take that and we say, okay, look, whatever I did, there's no divine intervention, therefore God does not exist. And then you come to me and there is divine intervention. There is the possibility of Jonah surviving in the belly of the whale. And then you say, look, God is like contradicting his own laws. We have to understand that God is in control of the creation, right? And there are, it proves to you that God does exist.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. Your team, when you mentioned fossil dating, carbon dating. Actually, there have been many experiments done on even living creatures where carbon dating shows that they're thousands of years old. Here's an example. Shells from living snails were carbon dated as being 20,000 years old. Living mollusk shells were dated up to 2,300 years old. A freshly killed seal was carbon dated as having lived 1,300 years ago. One part of a mammoth fossil was carbon dated at 29,500 years, and another part of the same fossil as 44,000 years. How can we use this idea of carbon dating and thinking that because we've used this method to determine how old things are, and we've dated things to be before the Bible said man was created, how can we trust that this is reliable if we've even seen that even live animals are dated to being thousands of years old?
Well, this is simply the error of humans. Carbon dating, I'm suspecting it's just a flawed method. But on that point, are you saying that the Earth is only 8,000 years old based on what's in the Bible?
No, there are young Earth creationists that believe that the Earth is literally as young as the generations would be that would be written in the Bible. But there are many Christians that believe that man was created at this time, but that they don't interpret the 6 days of creation as being six literal days. So there is nothing specific in Christianity that says that Earth has to be 8,000 years old.
In the Bible, this idea that those 6 days aren't taken literally as 6 days is in a subjective manner, meaning that humans read the Bible and then. Interpreted those 6 days to mean, say, 600 million years, something of that. Given that that denounces the credibility of the Bible, because then you can look at something else in the Bible and say, well, I'm going to take this in a subjective manner because I think it, you know, it's interpreted as this. So then you have an objective way of stating things, meaning it is the way it is written. So if I read 6 days in a Bible as an objective, that means it is 6 days. And then I can't go back in the Bible and say in Matthew or in the New Testament and read something and interpret it in a subjective manner. So given that duality, meaning it's not solid. Sure. Go for it.
I'm going to back that up actually with exactly what George was saying. He quoted a quote from Job saying about earth is not hung on a string, or the earth is not hung on a string. He quoted something that you defined as a poetic book, as in poetry, and took it as a fact, an objective, clear fact. Yet we take Genesis, a supposedly historical book, and subjectify it to convenience.
So because of this, the fact that so because of this objective and subjective reasoning, that subjective is determined by man's thoughts and by whatever, however they interpret it, this reduces the credibility of the Bible. And if man wrote the Bible through God's wisdom, therefore the Bible is wrong. Therefore God does not exist.
Okay, thank you. Last question. Share your team. In John 1:18, Jesus says, "No one has seen God at any time." But in Genesis 32:30, Moses says, "For I have seen God face to face, and my life is preserved." How can you reconcile this and other contradictions in the Bible?
The first verse, when Christ said, "No one has seen God," he's talking about God the Father. It's a Trinity here. So God the Father is, he has no image. When he's seen the icons of our church, there's no icon for the Father. It's the Son that's visible. That's the one that Moses saw. Or is it like the ancient church interpretation? That's like Moses saw the back of Christ on Mount Sinai.
Okay, thank you. So that concludes the debate. So please give everybody a round of applause.
Ned, can I say something real quick? So obviously we do believe in God. I'm just letting you know they did a great job, and I just wanted to let everybody know, if you notice, most of our arguments were based on attacking their questions and what they said, not really on evidence. And that's what most arguments are based on. So just there.
Okay, so we're just going to quickly go through the same questionnaire again like we did at the beginning to see, you know, how the results have changed. Number one, can God's existence be proven scientifically? Definitely not proven, but there is reasonable evidence. No evidence at all, or I don't know. Okay, so it seems similar to before, that some people say definitely, and a lot of people believe that there's reasonable evidence, and still some believe there is no evidence. Number two, can God's existence be disproven scientifically? A, yes, atheists can demonstrate that God does not exist. B, no, but there is reasonable evidence that God does exist. C, there is no credible evidence against God, or I don't know. Sorry, I accidentally skipped it. We can go back to it. How confident are you that God exists? No doubt in my mind, almost sure, doubtful, or God does not exist. So 66% no doubt, 14% almost sure, 11% doubtful, and 9% believe that God does not exist. Which actually leaps larger than before. Do you feel that atheists have good arguments against God's existence? Yes, can't argue against them. B, yes, but I think there are good responses. C, no, they don't make sense. Or D, I don't know. So 55%, there's good responses. 24%, can't argue with them. And 21%, no, they don't make sense at all. Do you feel that we are equipped to respond to atheists? Yes, we can respond effectively. B, we understand our faith but don't know how to respond. C, we don't understand our faith. Or D, they are right but we can't admit it. So 48% still feel like we do not know how to respond effectively. 26% believe we can respond. 19% believe we don't even understand our own faith to respond. And 7% they are right. Okay, this is not really related to the debate, so we're not going to answer that one. These were the results for the number two that we skipped. 36% believe that there is reasonable evidence that God does not exist. 28%. 36% believe there is no credible evidence against God, and the 21% believe that atheists are successfully able to demonstrate that God does not exist. Okay. Thank you. Now, Abuna Yunen is going to give like a brief summary of everything. And if you have any questions, if you can write them down on a piece of paper and you can leave them here, like give them to me at the table. And then Abuna will look at them and answer the selected questions that he chooses at the end. Okay, thank you.
In the name of the Father, and Son, Holy Spirit, one God, Amen. Of course, I'm not going to detail the position of the church on every question, even though I'm willing to answer whatever questions that will come to me. But I want you, while looking at this presentation, to think about it and have a certain approach that will help all of us to reach the answer of this question. Does God exist or not? Because many things, actually, that people claim to be scientific, or they have the position of there is evidence, there is nothing, it's a hoax, if we go and examine it carefully. So the first thing that we have to understand about God being invisible, yet clearly seen. And this is the mystery about God, as St. Paul said to the Romans. For since the creation of the world, His invisible attributes are clearly seen. They are invisible. We cannot see God. But meanwhile, we can still be able to see His fingerprints on everything around us. Let me ask you a question. If we come to this hall, and then two people are debating. One is saying, they are answering the question, who made this hole? One person says that some engineers came here and they installed everything in place. Another person says, no. If you don't bring these people here now, I don't believe you. I will give you another explanation. Just things came by coincidence and they evolved from something and it rained and energy and things mixed up. And over millions and billions of years, then this hole was found in place. When I said this, did I bring evidence? Did I make any kind of support to the argument that I could prove that this hole was founded by itself? Definitely not. When I say some people founded this, maybe I cannot really bring the evidence. I don't have photos for them. But I can tell you, from whatever arranged around us, there is some people who came and walked in here, and they founded this place. So the argument against or with, does God exist? Give me a solid evidence, a picture of Him. Really, this is not something that made sense, because I still can't prove that God is His attributes are seen in the creation around us. The debate is not between religion and science, as some people they like to portray it. It is not. Actually, evolution is the religion. It's not science. What do I mean by this? What is the definition of science? Science is knowledge about or study of the natural world based on facts. Learn it through experiments and observation. Meaning, what makes science is what? Something I was able to observe, I had pictures, or I can see it, or something and I can redo it again in the lab. This makes science. If something I cannot observe, I was not able to see or touch or smell, and at the same time I cannot remake it again, this is not science then. And as I'm saying, here this becomes like the argument, actually, it's a religion. As this pastor, his name is Kent Hovind, he says that when we say at the beginning was God, this is the first being. This is how we believe as religious. The people who say or claim that evolution is the truth, they believe that at the beginning was dirt. And this is how everything came. The first material was a rock. And from the rock, everything else came. Does anybody have any kind of pictures or any evidence that rocks evolved to become humans? No. Can we do it again? Can you bring a rock and we keep observing and try anything on it and it's going to change to become a living being? No. So how do we claim that this is science? If we cannot redo it and we have no evidence, we could not take any pictures, how can we say this is science? This is your own way of interpreting things. It becomes your religion, but do not call evolution science. This is not science. Something keep in mind when you hear that the scientist says, those people, they claim to be science, but they cannot say that evolution is a science. This is not according to what the definition of science is. I do not want us to be intimidated when people say big names or big expressions, or you come to your school and you hear your professor, whatever, in college or school, says things that you don't understand, that you think that, okay, if he says so, then I don't have an answer. As this man said, most of the supposed evidence for evolution is actually evidence for speciation and adaptation. A butterfly might have many, many shapes. This is not evidence for evolution. There is something called microevolution, meaning there is some change in the species. But a butterfly will always be a butterfly. We never saw a butterfly changing to become a dog. It never happened. And we never saw a plant starting to fly and become a butterfly. So all of the changes that happen, yes, it happens to adapt within the species. But nothing we can say that they are changing from something to another thing. Don't be intimidated when people say that this is what they think is what happened. We should take heed, as the Lord said, that no one deceives us. How the deception, how the hoax actually is communicated, and unfortunately it is taught in our textbooks as science. Like these vague explanations, as if throwing things on billions and billions of years, this will make sense. Sometimes when you ask someone, how did an animal evolve to become something else? They said this happened over millions and millions of years. But how? Did you see it happening? How exactly life existed? Nothing. So this is not an explanation. When I say billions and billions of years, I'm not bringing something solid that should convince anyone that this happened. Throwing it over billions and billions of years is really not an explanation. Or communicating false information about the fossil records. You know what a fossil is? This is a piece of a rock that has like a dead species on it and was skipped. So the people say that this fossil records proves the evolution. Really? Where is the phase where things were changing? If we say, for example, the fish became an animal, do we have something in the fossil that shows us the fish while moving to become an animal? A species in the middle between fish and animals? Nothing. There is nothing that really can prove what the people say. The truth is, when the fossil records are examined, species are the same since the beginning of their existence. By the way, people say that the species, animals and plants, all came from one cell. And they developed over billions and billions and billions of years. This is not the truth. What happened is the species appeared, all of them, on the face of the earth in a short period of time. So all of them existed as if like, if we imagine that this world is 24 hours in age. 24 hours. So what happened is, the 12 hours of the existence of the earth passed with no species. And then another 10 hours passed, 22 hours of this 24 hours passed with no living being. And suddenly, all of the species, plants and animals and reptiles, everything appeared on the face of the earth at the same time. So where is this, what they say, developed over billions and billions and billions of years? This is the truth. Don't be deceived when the people say the fossils, they show evidence of the evolution, because this is of the evolution, because this is not true. Or being deceived by wrong inferences. Like what? Maybe the people in high school can remember this. They bring some, like the arms of a human being and of another animal, and they say, look, they look like the same. So they came from the same origin. Really? Actually, this look the same because they were designed by the same designer, not because of they came from the same. Can, for example, if we see today a car like a Chevrolet and a Ford and anything, and then we look at them and say that, oh yeah, because they came, evolved from another, like from Toyota, millions and millions and millions of years. This is not, of course, this is not true. If we see a bridge here in Houston, and another one in San Francisco, and another one in London, and they all look the same, can we conclude that they evolved from one another? Actually, we say that they were designed, maybe, most likely, by the same person. So these are wrong inferences. When I see something, and I have my own understanding, and I communicate to you this as science. For example, they say that there are certain organs that they don't have any function. And this proves that we evolved from one another. Like what? They say that we have the appendix. They have no function. So this means that we came from another species. But this is not true. The appendix has a function, even though we can live without it. It does not mean it doesn't have a function. Actually, appendix is one of the parts where it has tissues that can help the immunity of the human being. We can live without it, but it does not mean that actually it does not exist. So all of these things about the whales, they have something like atrophied limbs. I don't know if you studied this or not. So they said this is the evidence that whales were walking on land before. Actually, these small bones in the side of the whale, they are helping the whales for reproduction. With these, controlling certain muscles that the whale needs while they are, like, mating. It is not something that because the whales were once walking on the earth. Again, a finding and an inference that is false. It's not right. People try to say this is science. This is not science. Or saying about the beginning of life. Here is something I want to tell you. Charles Darwin, when he came with his theory about the evolution, this was 1830. 1830, this was before the man makes the electric microscope. So he says that life was very simple. The cell, which is the basic unit, is made of a protoplasm, which is something like jello, and a nucleus. Very simple. So what happened, his vague explanation, that this started in the oceans, and this soup, as they say, something vague, but he imagined that the cell is very simple. And that's why certain things work together and made the cell. And then he says this is very important. If it could be demonstrated that any complex organ existed, which could not possibly have been formed by numerous successive slight modifications, my theory would absolutely break down. What does it mean? معناها ايه الكلمة دي? He said that the cell is very simple. If it is going to be proven one day that this cell is complicated very much, then it has to start like this, then my theory breaks down. This is a concept called the irreducible complexity. Let me explain this برضو in an easier way. يعني ايه? الناس فاكرة ان الخلية دي حاجتين خبطوا في بعض كده بطلعوا خلية. ان الخلية دي حاجة سيمبل خالص. ممكن نعملها في المعمل. Actually الحقيقة ان السيل دي عشان to exist it's very complicated. And there is no way it can exist and develop over time. عشان تبتدي لازم تبقى very complicated. Like what? Like looking at the trap, the mouse trap. A single system which is composed of several interacting parts that contribute to the basic function. And where the removal of any one of the parts causes the system to effectively stop functioning. In order for this trap to exist, عشان المصيرة تبقى موجودة, all of its parts should be there at the same time. So there is nothing called it can start with very simple thing and develops. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a, like a mouse trap from the beginning. In the same way, look at this like picture. This is how the flagella of the basic, like the very يعني, basic form of life exists. This needs 40 parts in order for this to function. So the first cell, the easiest and the most simple form of life, was so complicated, it did not go into development. In order for it to exist, it has to be very complicated. Who made all of this to happen at the same time? How this would really be something that we can say it evolved? It didn't. It was from the beginning very complicated and it cannot be reduced to something that's simpler than this. Again, the idea of the beginning. Atheists at a certain time, they debated and argued that there was something that started. They said the Big Bang. Did you hear this before? Something exploded. The question is, what is exactly this thing that exploded? Actually, the whole universe has a beginning. Albert Einstein, he concluded this when he looked at the Hubble microscope. He said, there should be a beginning. There was a time that was no time. So, what actually could happen in order for something to exist from nothing? In order for something to exist, someone has to be able to make a decision. The time has to start and something is going to come. Who is this? Who is this first being? As I'm telling you, there was nothing. Nothing means nothing. How can anything exist from nothing? If there is no one who made a decision and he said something in order for time to start and something to appear. There is a beginning. If there is a beginning, then there is someone who made the decision for things to start. And also another thing we should be looking at is the pattern of things. What do you mean by this? If you go into a garden, not a garden, a field, and you just find some kind of trees, random, you can say that Jesus came out of, like no one was there. But if you see information, in this tree, there was like this kind of, you know, this is a human face made out of trees. Can this come by coincidence, randomly? So the pattern is, whenever there is information, there is intelligence behind it. Whatever we are seeing now, why we cannot see that there is information, but no intelligence? The people who are atheists, they believe that matter was formed before mind. Matter before mind. Matter created mind or evolved into a mind. But this is not what's happening now. For anything to be present, there should be a mind. If there is information, there is intelligence. How can we apply something or think that something happened billions and billions of years ago and we cannot see it happening now? Why it's not happening now? Why nothing that's evolving haphazardly and making something that's very organized? Another pattern is life producing something of its own kind. Human being bring a human being. A rat will bring a rat. Where does it happen that a human being gives birth maybe to a cat? Or a rat evolves into something else? It's not happening around us. If we never witness this, why we assume that everything started like this? And the plant started to fly and swim and this becomes an animal and this becomes a human being. Whatever we are watching is exactly what we can apply on the past. why we don't see this happening now. Every species bring from its own species the same. Another pattern is mutations. People who believe that evolution is right, they say that things mutated, changed genetically in order to produce something else. But this is not the case. Mutations actually is scrambling of the information of the species. It will bring the same species. And mutations are always bad. When mutations happen, you don't see, for example, that the mutations bring a superhuman being. Why? It never happened. When mutations happen, this means a defect will occur. Something bad happened to this species. That's why mutations was the reason behind it. Why we have to believe that mutations were all good and made of the development of these 200 million different species that lived on the face of the earth. It doesn't make sense why it has to happen before and we cannot see it today. All of these should be in our minds when we hear the stories over and over about the evolution. Again, the questions that are not answered. Where did the laws come from? Mina was saying that man made his own law, the moral law. And this is only in areas where there is populations. I will ask you a question. If a man was to live by himself on North Pole, and this person never saw anyone, and then you can ask, and you ask him a question about taking something that's not yours, would he say this is right or wrong? Killing someone, would he say this is right or wrong before knowing anything or being taught? Who made this moral law inside of us? Actually, the idea that Mina is saying is about civilization, not about the moral law. Civilization exists, yes, because people change and amend in order for them to have a better society. But the moral law is built in. We are born with it. We all have this conscience that says right and wrong, good and evil, even if we are not brought in a civilized or in a crowded population. Where is the law of gravity and all of this law of nature come from? If there is a law, then there is a lawgiver. How did life begin? All of the books that you studied in science that claim that evolution is the right theory, none of them can bring one single evidence how life, or explain it, how life started. No one. I'll tell you what is the answer. They say that science is working on it, and we are approaching, and we are going to get there. But you are not there yet. And you never found how life started. Otherwise, you would be able to remake it again. Who made the fine-tuning of the universe to make everything perfect, to fit the existence? All of these are questions, very important, not answered. And while not answered, the people still claim this is science. And again, it's not. As the Bible reveals to us, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows His handiwork. We can learn even from the speechless creation. The Bible says, the fool said in his heart, there is no God. This is not scientific to say it's evidence that there is evidence that God does not exist. And again, at the end, I'm going to go out from this like the science and like religion thing. God's existence is not something maybe we can bring it under microscope. But this is the relationship that we all have with Him. That we know that we came from Him and we are going to end up with Him as well. So I want just to have the mindset how we approach the subject. Some of you voted here that there is some kind of evidence that God does not exist. And I would challenge anyone who voted to say God does not exist to come and say something. I will tell you what the impression you have. You have the impression, because this is in the books, that this is true. This is science. But this is not true, and this is not science. And none of us can say with a clear conscience that I heard an evidence that God does not exist, and I can bring it to you, and I challenge you with it. Okay. If you have any question about the subject, if you wrote it or anything, or you would like to ask either. If God is involved in everything, then why when sometimes bad happens, we say that it was the devil, not God, or that God was testing us. Why do we always seem to have a way to justify God's actions, yet we turn around and say that God is too complicated for us to understand? We know God through His revelation to us. What He tells us, God reveals Himself as much as we can comprehend. We always forget that we are created with a free will. Yes, we can do whatever. Does not mean that we have to have explanation related to God. Why do we suffer? Sometimes actually suffering comes because of our choices. Maybe we don't have explanation for everything, but this is because we have free will. It does not mean because we are, in a way, God does not exist. If I cannot explain it, then God does not, is not there. If there is multiple religions, and we believe that many of them are not true and are made by men, then how can we be sure that Christianity is not man-made? Maybe this will be a subject for another debate, because we can go through this and we talk a lot. And Christianity, by all like measures, by historical measures, by the message in it, by the author of the religion, by everything, it's proven actually to be the true yani religion. But this is something that can take us into maybe the next debate. Is the genocide of the Jews all through history and God holding a grudge on them for crucifying Him? God forgive them on the cross. How can we say that He holds a grudge on them? Yeah, and isn't Christ who said that, ask it for forgiveness for them? So what do you mean? God does not hold the grudge. We hold the grudge. And if not, then how do we justify their constant persecution? The persecution is related to the nature of the people. Wherever they go, they make trouble. Yes. And yes, we understand that God disperses them throughout the nations. But how this proves that God does not exist? Most of all animals have different species. Like there are tens of species of monkeys. Do humans ever had more than one species? No, we never heard of this. We never had like different species of humans. And we never evolved into something else. If this is the case, why would we not move into something super or better? So definitely we don't know. Humans are humans since their existence on the face of the earth. I have often observed such debate arguments between theists and atheists, and I have never seen them produce results. So what are results? How can I balance between not wasting time or empty debates and defending my faith and my God? If you want to know, search yourself. The debate is just an opening, something to stimulate your mind to go and search. You can hear what the people are saying here and the other side, and you can justify or you understand yourself which one makes more sense. So, again, this is subject for all of us to start searching and examining the evidence from both sides. If God exists, then why do natural disasters that kill millions of innocent people happen all the time? We live in a fallen world. We know this, yes, from the Bible. We like the Bible or not, but this is what we heard, what we understood. There will be a time when this is not going to happen. But even the presence of these disasters, how can this prove that God does not exist? Actually, if these disasters happen in this world and this is the only chance for us to live, this is entirely unfair. This is what makes actually that the idea that God does not exist. Because not fear. But if we know that living here is just for the time being, and this is not the end of everything, then we can understand them. Presence of disasters or anything around us simply is, as we believe as Christians, we are living in a fallen nature. How you explain the something of fossils from very simple one cell to become complicated? This fossil does not exist. whoever wrote this, there is nothing cold, there is a fossil of a cell, and then we find this cell erupting into something else and something else. This is a lie. This doesn't exist. As we find the fossils in the old rocks, how evolved by time from simple to be more complicated. Nothing like this exists. There is nothing in the fossil records that says there is transition. There is no fish that has legs in the fossils. There is no birds. Yeah, sadam. سمحنا مفاد. Actually, the complication or the development is within the species. But nothing exists, and I am 100% sure about this, that fossils evolved, or we can see fossils from species changing into another species. I would be more than happy you bring me something that's really evidence that there is transitional species on the fossils. No, this is not سمحني عم. This is, doesn't exist. Bring me evidence for this, that there is transitional fossils between species. Get me one, and I would be more than happy to go back into this and look at. Do we conclude that the existence of God can neither be proved or disproved? Again, if we are looking at something to examine with our eyes, I cannot bring this under the microscope. But if you want to tell me that this building was found by itself, you call this as a proof for that God does not exist, I would believe that the whole universe, with all of the complexity and variables, they were found by themselves. If you think this is a proof. Only faith in the presence of God. Science supports faith, not the other way around. Science proves the faith that we hold, that this universe, there was an intelligence behind it. It's not the other way. And that if you similarly only have faith in absence of God, they need more faith than us because they have no evidence that can say that this, all of this universe was found by itself. It needs more faith to be an atheist, by the way, because science is not on your side. If you are making your own inferences or developing your own like ideas, this does not make it science still. Does the existence of God come down to faith? And again, as I said, science proves the presence of intelligence, if you would like to use the word. There is something behind what we see. It cannot be by itself, by coincidence, randomly. As I said, if there is information, then there is intelligence. There is a lot of information around us in the world that we live in. Any more questions, Nabil? The idea of the basic morality, Nabil, meaning what is right and wrong, is the same. For the cannibals, they do not define eating someone else as right or wrong. They define it as hunting. So meaning, for example, in Egypt, when the people go and they kill others, they do not think of what they are doing as wrong. They think of it as good. But no one would say that killing someone for no reason is just good, unless this person has some kind of a mental flaw. So the people has to twist something in order for them to define what is wrong as good, but they still think it's good, meaning taking something that's not yours is defined in the conscience of every human as wrong. But if I justify it to myself that I can steal those people who are thieves, then taking their money is not wrong, but I made this justification. But the mere idea of taking something that does not belong to me is definitely, I know that this is wrong. When Cain killed Abel, he knew that this is wrong. He did not think, I don't know, have any moral law. I don't know if this is good or not. Who made the instinct? Okay, so who made this? You call it instinct, we call it a moral law. The moral law that defines what's good and bad. Morality can define many, many things. But this thing that we call it the instinct or the conscience, the conscience is not an organ where we can locate, but we know that we are born with it. Who made this built-in instinct or conscience or moral law to exist? Who made humans to be born with it? And this is the question. Okay. Any more questions? Thanks for the teams and for the Nader who organized all of this.